All right, five on the nose. Thanks for joining us, folks, for Notes from the Field, Windows Azure Pack, IaaS, and PaaS. I am Pete Zerger. I'm a virtual TSP with Microsoft, an MVP in the cloud and data center space.
Anders Bengtsson, I'm a senior PFE at Microsoft.
You can tell by Anders' accent he is not from Houston. He's clearly a Dallas man. So before we get started today, I'd like to just take a poll and understand where you are with your life with Windows Azure Pack. So don't be shy about being very honest here. So how many of you in here have deployed Windows Azure Pack? So a few, okay. How many of you are actively using Windows Azure Pack? Like this is a day in, day out sort of thing, okay? Good. How many of you are interested in Windows Azure Pack and planning to go home and get started? Like Monday, right? Monday, Tuesday-ish. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Oh, you're starting Sunday. I hear you. Okay. Good, good. How many of you have deployed the WAP VMs feature, so virtual machines? That's your focus. How many WAP websites users do we have in here? Not many. That's what I thought. Okay. So we'll chat about that. Great. Appreciate the feedback. So our agenda today is really one of notes from the field. So there have been some great sessions around, you know, how do we deploy step by step, right? So that's not what we're going to be about today. We're going to talk to you through, you know, the whole process with some tips and recommendations, you know, from planning to streamlining your setup to troubleshooting when things don't work exactly as planned. Now, we also saw some hands there that most of you are using just the virtual machines feature. So I'd like to talk to you about that websites feature. And we want to help you understand, you know, how to plug in the WAP features to solve problems in the real world for your companies, for your customers, right? So we're not here to help you deploy WAP. We're here to help you make it better, to get through some of those common challenges, to avoid some of the pitfalls that, you know, certainly Anders and I ran into as we were deploying. If you've looked at WAP already, you know there are a lot of moving parts, so we want to help you understand a bit about how the pieces fit together. Always easier to troubleshoot when we know how the moving parts work in concert to deliver the final solution. So from a Q&A perspective, you know, I think we've got about 4 hours of content. We have about 75 minutes to deliver that, so I'm going to talk really fast. So there's an Ask the Expert session right after this one, so we'd love all your questions. If you want to go have a beer with us and sit down and talk and whiteboard and what have you, we will stay as long as you want to stay to get through all the Q&A that you're up for. So let's just do a quick level set for those of you who haven't deployed WAP yet and get ourselves going down the road. So we have the virtual machines feature. Infrastructure as a service, familiar to all of us as IT pro. How many IT pros do we have in the room? Are we mostly an IT pro audience? Developers? A little bit fewer? Yeah, we got some stuff for you anyway. The WAP websites feature allows us to deploy .NET applications, not just, you know, .NET websites. Certainly you can, but I can deploy open source technologies too. So things like .NET Nuke, you know, features that require a front end and a database back end, like WordPress. Drupal, etc. The WAP databases feature, which is also a platform as a service component, really goes hand in hand with the websites feature. So when I deploy a WordPress instance, for example, my database, which is going to be a MySQL backend, actually lives in the WAP databases component. So I really see these two PaaS components going hand in hand, but they have a real place in every enterprise. You know, certainly I can deploy virtual machines all day long and solve problems for my developers, for my application owners, but these website and database components have a place. We're not really going to be talking about service bus. So virtual machines, websites, and databases, yeah. Service bus, not so much. Anders might be able to answer some service bus questions in the Ask the Experts.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not really expert around it, but sure. Course.
Yeah, so after a beer, Anders is an expert in everything. So just give him a beer, and by 6:45,
well,
tell us about service bus.
After a beer, I'm also a firefighter, a space hero, yeah.
Yeah, he actually has a ninja uniform in his bag that he says.
Yeah, but we decided not to talk about that.
Okay. Yep. So let's talk about the WAP architecture for just a moment. So you have these two components right here, the service management portal, so our admin portal and our tenant portal that our users, our application owners, our support teams are going to use. And those talk to the service management API. Now, if we decide we're going to deploy that website component, and I really hope you do, that websites component has about 7 roles you see there. Most of your installation is going to come from this controller feature there. Our initial install, we're going to run the web platform installer, and it's going to deploy from the controller, our management server, our publisher. but you can't colo these roles on a single virtual machine. The way WAP websites is designed to scale, it scales in a way similar to Microsoft Azure. So it's really, in a way, very consistent from an API perspective to what you see with Microsoft Azure websites. It's very interesting. So it can be a little intimidating because of all of those VMs, but we don't want to let that stop you. We want to help you be comfortable with that process. The databases component here, I'm talking about the PaaS component, WAP databases. We're going to have a Microsoft SQL Server there at minimum. We're going to have a MySQL Server if we want to deploy some of the open source, you know, non-Microsoft technologies like a WordPress, like a Drupal. Incidentally, in your lab environment, you can run a single VM that has Microsoft SQL and MySQL installed, and that's going to be just fine. You know, you don't want to take that to prod, obviously, but it doesn't hurt to consolidate a bit there. Okay, so now we're back in comfortable territory here with the WAP virtual machines component. We have VMM on the front end. You have Hyper-V. In the back end, you notice I don't have any vSphere nodes there because WAP doesn't work with vSphere off the shelf, right? There is a third party out there that recently announced they have a vSphere add-in for WAP, so lots of nice integration coming. So go out and do a Bing search on that and some good options there. Now, you notice that SPF is in there. The Service Provider Foundation is a RESTful API. That's our gateway into VMM. We're going to use that for deployment communication and actually to extract some usage data as well. So at the end of the day, we want to get some reporting data back so we can see who's using what and send them the bill. SMA. So some of you have already been in the audience here talking to me about service management automation, the new orchestration component. Anders is excited about SMA, clearly. Jacob. You think SMA is really not a core component, and you'd have a point, but honestly, when we get into operations, we get into lifecycle management, SMA is going to be very, very handy. You know, we don't deploy a cloud to manually administer it, right? So when we talk lifecycle management later in the session, Anders will show you how to make some magic with SMA. SCOM, Operations Manager. How many SCOM folks we have in the room? That's what I'm talking about, my people. I like it. So Operations Manager also may not feel like a core component of a WAP architecture, as you know, we could say with Service Manager, the ITSM component of System Center. So we're going to talk about ITSM integration. That's really a place that hits home for Anders and I know when we're thinking about process automation. So it's equally important in the WAP world. And SCOM is actually a core element for usage data with WAP. So this all has a place in our environment. And certainly, from a troubleshooting perspective, we're going to be pretty excited about SCOM throughout the process. So databases, WAP does have a couple of databases in the back end to support all of those roles in the front end. So we wanted to kind of map these out so you know which databases belong to which components. So this is a very easy, you know, comfortable process for you. The virtual machines component has some databases you see here. The portal config store, the store usage, SPF, your service provider foundation. Websites has some databases of its own, the hosting database, resource metering. The databases component, that PaaS component, has a MySQL and a Microsoft SQL component you see back here that store information about your instances and what's deployed there. Usage reporting has a data warehouse. Now, I talk about that like the data warehouse is one database. You see three there, and we'll kind of unpack this for you in the usage reporting section a bit later. How many service manager users do we have in the room? Anybody? Bueller? Oh, you guys are fantastic. So you're going to be very comfortable with the ETL process that we talk about there. And then finally, you see we have the SMA database, so our automation component.
Well, on top of that, we will have 2 SCOM databases, 2 service manager databases, 1 virtual machine manager database, and I guess a couple of logging databases too. So around 18, 20 databases.
So there are a couple of databases,
right? Couple
no,
of them,
no
yes.
big deal. You've got a slide here that sort of maps out, you know, which databases belong to what. And that's really what we wanted to do here, was kind of unpack this and simplify a very powerful solution that, you know, has a few moving parts.
A few.
Yeah. So, you know, when we think about cloud in the first place, you know, why do we do this? So is there anybody that's deployed WAP and hasn't had fantastic adoption just right off, where it's just you playing with it? Okay, so a couple of people. We want to talk to you about that. So, you know, every time Anders gets something cool, I find I want one too, right?
Like a hamster?
Well, maybe not like a hamster, but that might be a good example in Sweden. I'm not sure. You know, help me, guys. You can imagine, because everybody else has one, is not a good reason to deploy a cloud, right? You know, and I think we're all pretty comfortable with private cloud at this point in time. Let's just recap what we get from a cloud. We get a shared fabric where we reduce our infrastructure costs. We can scale on demand because we're sharing with our other tenants. We've got some good usage-based showback, chargeback type reporting, hopefully. And then we've got that self-service capability that everybody gets excited about. They can push IT out of the way and they can deploy stuff, which is what it's about for a lot of folks. You know, at the end of the day, it's about streamlining service delivery, reducing our operational expenditures to make life better. So what does WAP bring to the party here? And I'm looking at you folks that have deployed WAP that haven't had the universal, fantastic acceptance, and you want to go back and get your org more excited about this. You know, WAP gives us some advanced template-based capabilities. We can deploy not just virtual machines, but applications. We can configure our scale settings, our network. The Azure-like interface in and of itself is not critical, other than it gives us a very consistent experience with what we see with Microsoft Azure. So if you listened to Brad Anderson's keynote, you know Microsoft Azure might be kind of important as we go forward, right? So that consistency is nice. It reduces our training requirement, and it gives us a nice consistent experience for our end users. The PaaS components, I'm going to, you know, beat this drum a couple of times. The PaaS components for you IT pros like me in big organizations has a place, and we're gonna put some use case focus on WAP and talk about where the PaaS element of WAP fits in the real world into environments. And of course, we've got the orchestration engine that makes Anders go make that funny noise every time I say it, so hopefully that's not too much of a trend. Let's just get real about what WAP does and doesn't do out of the box, and how things unravel as we start a new Windows Azure pack project. So I'm just thinking from, you know, being out in the field and seeing how things go down at a typical customer environment. Not difficult to get people excited about self-service, right? Everybody wants to be able to provision more easily. The Azure-like interface always gets a lot of oohs and ahs. There are people kind of poking into the conference room. What's that? You know, that looks like Windows Azure. That's interesting to everybody. So we showed you the WAP architecture diagram. Lots of moving parts there, right? So we need to manage the perception around complexity. It's only complex if we don't plan appropriately ahead of time. That websites component, we need to do some positioning there. If you already have some hosting you're doing for your application developers for their, you know, test and dev environments, there can be a perception of competition, and we want to be careful about that. Setup. Setup can be challenging. You know, let's be honest. So if you've deployed WAP, setup is not something you do successfully without reading the manual and doing a little bit of planning first, right? So that's a reality. With great power comes some responsibility to map your course first. That WAP website's footprint can be perceived as large. We have 7 virtual machines. What is 7 virtual machines in the scope of providing capacity for, you know, groups of developers and application owners? It's not that much. So we establish a nice base, and then we can scale out through little farm additions there, incrementally adding workers and controllers, et cetera. So it's actually much less daunting and footprint heavy than one would think at first glance. And then there's ITSM integration.
Well, we will cover that in a later demo here. We have some
Yeah, I think the partner community gives us a good story,
yeah, exactly.
Right? So So I think it's not all bad news. So pre-install tips and best practices. You know, there are a lot of little technical things that show up in the guide that you can handle with group policy. If you're running Windows 2012, right, so enabling WinRM so we can manage servers is an everyday thing, firewalls, etc., all group policy capable.
Yeah. The only really important part here is design and plan. That's super important. A little bit like working with configuration managers, like no coincidence if you manage to deploy something. So it's a little bit like that here. You really need to do your design and your plan before you start.
Yeah, so there's no group policy for design and planning, right? So you've got to put a pencil to paper and do some work there. Anders, show us some troubleshooting. What we wanted to talk about was just the troubleshooting process and the tools and techniques here in case your deployment doesn't go perfectly on the first try. It's totally going to, but just in case.
Yeah, in case. So during the installation, if something goes wrong during the installation, you can use the web platform installer log files. So this is the folder up here, and you will see you get one log file for each component. So if you're installing all components on one server, you will have many log files there. If you install on different servers, you will have log files on different servers.
Yeah, so just get comfortable with that directory because it's the same on every server.
Exactly. So once the installation is done and everything is up and running, it's time to start configure everything. And that can be a little bit tricky, I have heard.
Yeah, that's a vicious rumor. So, once we get through the platform installer, we click the configure button, right? And that launches us into another web-based interface. So then we leave our web platform logs
exactly.
And we go somewhere else.
When you do that web-based configuration, it's very important that you run Internet Explorer as admin, else you will end up in all kind of different strange error messages like can't configure database, can't set up, can't do this and this. So make sure you start Internet Explorer as admin. Also,
absolutely, because when you click the configure, right, it launches IE for you, just not in admin mode.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also make sure that you have all the permissions set before. Pete was talking about service accounts before, and there is a lot of service accounts, and they need all different kind of permissions. So make sure you have all that set up before you start doing the configuration. That will save you a lot of time. And if you still run into some issues, you can always use Event Viewer. There is a set of good logs that you can look in. Down here. It will actually give you really good info. Often you can find it in there. Don't have to go into the like tricky log files. Often you find it there. And then if you can't find it there or anywhere else, you can enable trace logging on your websites. It's a little bit more advanced, but it's a very good way to find, for example, if you're trying to set up connection to, let's say, a service provider foundation and something's wrong with your account, it's quite easy to find it if you enable trace logging.
Yeah. Anytime I'm adding an endpoint to WAF, if something doesn't work right, it gives me a friendly error message, but typically not quite enough detail to solve the problem. So turning on trace logging, if you want to just get right to the point, can be really helpful.
Absolutely. One thing you can also do, of course, is to browse to Service Provider Foundation web service to make sure that you have connection to VMM. As Service Provider Foundation would be a little bit of the center point here, it's quite good if it works.
Well, it's pretty unscientific, right? You're just hitting the Service Provider Foundation endpoint and just making sure you have data. Show us how to enable trace logging in IIS.
Of course.
How about that?
Of course.
So trace logging in IIS is 100% UI operation.
So in here, in the IIS tool, you can fail request tracing rule. You just click on that one and enable it. And if you can't find it in there, most likely you haven't installed the tracing role under or the tracing feature under the web server role. So then you have to add on that feature and you will find. Then you can enable failed request tracing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there is one more thing in here, right? So if you try to browse to your Service Provider Foundation web service and it doesn't look like this, there is no data at all in there, you might need to go into Internet Options, Content here, and then turn off the Feed Reading View, because the Feed Reading View will make it look like a like a normal internet feed without any data. So make sure that you uncheck that if you try to troubleshoot service provider foundation so you actually see something in here.
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you, sir.
And usage data, we'll get back to that later.
We'll troubleshoot usage data later for sure. All right, so streamlining setup. We're not going to waste too much time here, but bottom line, there's a nice WAP install checklist out on TechNet, so grab that, have that in hand. Get your service accounts created, get them permissioned. When we deploy that WAP websites role in particular, a lot of your deployment's coming from the controller, so if you forget some of those prereqs, if you don't have your security accounts, your service accounts in the right groups, etc., your install's going to fail. Some nice resources out on the internet for automating WAP deployment with PowerShell Deployment Toolkit. You know, every button you don't push is one less, chance to push the wrong button, right? All of the resources, the URLs, the scripts, etc., that we have in this session, you're going to find four or five slides at the end of this deck with all of those in one tidy little package so you can go drill down through all of the how-tos and pick up the scripts we're using here and so forth. So once we get through the install, which you're going to get on your first try, maybe your second try, we want to go do a few things to just optimize the user experience. First thing that comes to mind is go replace your self-signed certificates with proper certificates, from a issuing authority that is trusted, so you don't get the little nasty grams in Internet Explorer. Enable console connections. Console connections is that new 2012 feature that allows you to connect to a virtual machine when it's offline or when it's having network connectivity problems. That's going to save some phone calls from your tenants to the service desk that are going to roll up to you. So definitely worth having. We've got the how-tos, pretty straightforward, pretty well documented. So in that resources section, we actually have a nice troubleshooting article out there that could help you as well. So deploy your SCOM agents and deploy the WAP management pack for SCOM. One thing I really love about that is all of my WAP components, error messages, float up into one area. So I'm not surfing through logs on individual servers. I'm looking in one spot.
Yeah, you will notice that further on here in the session that there is a lot of moving parts here when everything is up and running. So you will really need SCOM and all the management packs.
Yeah, absolutely. And then finally, as an administrator, you're going to be logging in with your Active Directory account. Your tenants are really using what behind the scenes is just an ASP.NET membership database type account. So for them, it's going to be a separate login. Think about Active Directory Federation, right? So ADFS allows you to take that AD single sign-on experience out to your tenants, which just gives you better credibility in an enterprise, right? ADFS gets easier to set up all the time. Nice three-part series from the Building Clouds blog out there in the resource tips. If you want to watch the step-by-step, Mark, one of our Dutch friends, did a great session on WAP yesterday afternoon and walked through the ADFS step-by-step. So definitely go have a look. So let's put some scenario focus on this, and I just want to test where we are right now in explaining WAP and make sure we know how to apply WAP features most effectively in our environment. So we'll take Contoso Toys. Stop that, it's contagious. We've got our Contoso data center team, and they need to provide network storage and compute for developers, for testing, for production to a variety of groups across the org. Their tenants have a lot of different needs. They're going to need some choice based on their requirements. They need to be able to delegate access to their SQL instances down at the instance level. Bottom line, they need really good performance, right? They need to be able to support production workloads and to provide a fair bit of control to their tenants, to their customers. They want to minimize their admin efforts. That's what clouds are all about. But they want to provide flexibility to the business units to scale and delegate to their subordinates as necessary. And then, of course, in the end, make sure everybody is accountable for what they spend. So if I were going to take a WAP feature and apply it to this scenario, what do you think? PaaS? Any votes for PaaS here? Couple? Okay. IaaS. Okay? Yeah. So infrastructure as a service is going to be a clear choice here because we need to delegate at the SQL instance level. If I'm looking at the PaaS solution at WAP databases, I can deploy databases in the PaaS databases element, but I can't control security down at the instance level. I don't have visibility that far down the stack. So IaaS is going to be a great fit here. Just a couple of notes from the field here. See a lot of folks using WAAP to deploy virtual machines. And if you're just deploying VMs from templates, you're missing a lot of the power of WAAP. So focus on VM roles. Look at the application deployment capabilities. Anders going to show you some of that in a minute. Don't author your resources manually. Is there anybody in here that's used the VM authoring, role authoring tool? No? A couple? Okay. You need to never edit a template again. You need to be looking at the VM role authoring tool. Unless you just really love JSON, which is every bit as fun as XML, that role authoring tool is fantastic. The gallery resources that are available for you on TechNet already cover a variety of workloads. Certainly Microsoft SQL's out there, Oracle's out there. There's a new gallery resource import tool, which sort of defies description. It's actually a really fancy PowerShell script that spawns this UI. It's fairly impressive, but it will allow you to import your gallery images into your WAAP and VMM environment. Now, Anders will show you how to do it the old-fashioned way, just so you get an appreciation for what Grit will actually do for you. The role authoring tool is actually out there on CodePlex, authored by Microsoft folks, solid tool, really nice. The import tool was released back in March, so maybe you haven't heard of Grit yet, but definitely have a look at that and start poking around checking out those VM roles. So before we go in and have a look at the IaaS component, here's what a virtual machine role looks like. This is what you build in the VM role authoring tool. So there is a logical component we call the resource definition that contains information about the VM, the operating system, some parameters. There's a view definition, which contains the UI components, basically what is going to be presented to my tenant that subscribes to this resource. So a fair bit more going on here than you would see in a virtual machine template where you just have an operating system profile and a hardware profile, right? Here's what you actually import. So here's what you're building. You're building a gallery item at the end of the day. So you've got a resource definition package, which you import into WAAP through the user interface. On the right-hand side there, you have the resource extension, which is what you import into Virtual Machine Manager through PowerShell. So it's a kind of a two-step process, bit of a disconnected experience. That's where the Grit tool can actually come in pretty handy. So show us around, man.
Absolutely. So there this is the VM role authoring tool that you can use to build these two files that Pete was talking about. So when you start it, you just go up here on the file menu and you create a resource definition file and a resource extension file. So the resource definition file that I have here is used to set all the settings like VM size, operation system settings, and so on. And it also includes the view definition. And the view definition defines what the tenants will see in the Windows Azure Pack portal.
So I see the JSON view.
Yes, there. It's there.
Yeah.
You want to see it?
I want to see it. Yeah, so if you've not edited the, if you're editing the templates manually today, you know what this looks like. And if you're not, don't, right? So the UI will sort of avoid that experience. If you were having this discussion a year ago, we'd actually be neck deep in JSON doing all that. So the authoring tool is a big win for usability for sure.
Yeah, and then we have the extension file down here, and that will describe for VMM how to deploy what we have in our resource definition file. In these files, we can now configure everything we want to have in our new VM role. For example, we can set up all the parameters. What will the tenant input when they request an instance of this VM role? We can configure application profiles like roles and features that we want to install on the new machine. We can also include a provisioning script. So I have a script here running an installation. We can also go up and do add, and we can add like SQL profiles and add more scripts and add other settings that we want in our new virtual role or VM role. We can go under network, configure the network adapter. And also there is one more here. Let me see, here it is, the hard disk tag. This is quite important.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. If you, this is, the tag is used to connect the VM role to the virtual hard disk in VMM that we will use when we're deploying these machines. So if you don't get the tags correct on the disks, as in here, there will be no disk to use. So it will look for a disk with the same tags. So make sure you get the tags correct on your virtual hard disks in VMM.
And Anders had quite a few tips in this process. I think we thought we were going to share all those, what, maybe eight things you wanted to share around, you know, just stumbling blocks that people run into here pretty commonly. So he's gathered all of those up into a single blog post.
Yes, it's all on Contoso.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so when we are done in here, configure everything we want, we can do validate and validate our files to make sure that they are correct, no errors in there. And then we save it. And on the disk, we will now have two files, and we will also have a couple of folders with like supporting files. For example, if we configure that we want to have some special logos in the Windows Azure Pack portal, so when you go in and order these machines, there should be some special logo. All those files are stored in these folders here. Here they are. Yeah. So once we have our files, we can now import them. And we can either do that with here it is, the Grit tool. It's really nice. It's one huge PowerShell script, but it gives you a nice UI. So when you start this, you point to your files that we just created in the VM role authoring tool. And then in here, it will help you to map together with hard disk. You can even, if you haven't configured it before, you can even set up hard disk settings down here when you're running the tool, like hard disk tags. And you can import everything into WAP and into VMM. So it's quite handy tool, really nice. It's totally unsupported, that's good to know, but it's still a nice tool. I need to say that.
Yeah, you have to say that, yeah. So supported and functional and encouraged to use are different things, right? So Microsoft encourages you to use resources off the TechNet gallery, off of CodePlex, so no big deal.
So now we can look at the supported way.
Indeed, yeah. So show us the supported way.
Yeah, so the supported way is a PowerShell script to import the file into VMM. It's actually just this small part here. No secret script at all. It's on 100 of blogs already. And then it's handy to also include some lines to verify hard disk tags there. As we said before, if you don't have the tags correct, when you're trying to deploy, it will not find a virtual hard disk. So it's really important to get all the tags correct. And so this is the file into VMM. But then you also have the file that you need to import into Windows Azure Pack. So you log on to Windows Azure Pack as an administrator, go to your VM clouds, go to gallery, click import, pick your file, and import it. And when you have imported it, it will be marked as private. So if you see in the bottom here of the screen, there is mark private because I have already published it. But when you have imported something new in here, it's marked private. And private means that no one can use it. So make sure that you change that to public before you want any tenant to use it.
Indeed.
And once you have done that, you can add this to a plan. So I have a plan here, Tech Ed Developers. I have a couple of services here. I have request management and the virtual machine clouds. Let's go into virtual machines clouds. And we scroll down a little bit. So down here, we have gallery, which you can use then to just add gallery items to the plan so the tenants can start using it. And in this case, we also had a parameter where the tenants can input the virtual network. We configure that in the VM role authoring tool. So if you want your tenants to also choose a virtual network, it's a good idea to also give them access to networks up here. Else that drop-down will be blank, and it will be a little bit like a bad mood.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah. And so you've got control over what you give your tenants. You know, the right to select and what you hard code for them. So
exactly.
if you only deploy to one virtual network, maybe you hard code that.
Yeah, and once you have done this, you go over to virtual machines as a tenant, and And you can now do new from gallery, virtual machine role from gallery. Pick the one here, next. Pick input a name. Choose the size of the machine. Input the admin password for the machine. This is all the parameters that are configured in the VM role authoring tool. So, and they can also pick a network down here. And once that machine is deployed, it will show up here under virtual machines. The tenants can go into the machine. And this is quite nice. They can open the machine. They can do configure. And they can, for example, change the size of the machine. And then they can also get this. They have this dashboard where you can see how everything is running there.
And if you configure the console connect feature, they can connect to it, you know, before they even turn it on. So.
Yeah. So when you do this, when you get back home and doing this on Monday or Tuesday next week, you will most likely experience some errors. And I have gathered them here on my blog. So if you go to contoso.sc, I have written down 8 or 9 of them. The error message, why you get the error message, and what you should do to solve the error message. So the most common 8 are there. Yeah.
Yeah, so we didn't have time to work these all into the session. If you can't sleep tonight, call me. This article will help. But this is great to kind of have on your second screen as you're going through this process for the first time, for sure. Your second screen for your first time through the process. So let's cover off another scenario. So we leave the data center guys behind, we walk down the hall and we find the developers. And the app dev team at Contoso maintains a number of .NET and PHP web-based apps. They're developing on a rapid release cycle. They're doing agile dev. So they've got weekly interim releases. And their biggest problem right now is, you know, they're not IT pros, right? So managing their environment is challenging. You know, the data center team deployed some VMs for them and said, here you go, here's what you asked for. And they just can't keep their environment clean enough to support their rapid releases. And if they can't deploy, they can't release, it's lost productivity, it's potentially lost revenue, it's certainly going to be embarrassing, you know, outwardly facing to the other business units. So what the dev team needs here is the ability to deploy the apps so they can do their dev work, they can deploy with, you know, whether it's TFS or Bitbucket or what have you. They don't really want the care and feeding of the environment. What they really want is to be able to deploy and destroy, right? And some testing and development in between. So give me a show of hands. IaaS as a solution here? So if you raise your hand for IaaS, you would be right. You know, IaaS would actually solve this problem. I can deploy virtual machines and let my devs do this all day long. The PaaS component is really going to make sense here. So WAP websites with databases in an enterprise with developers that use Visual Studio, this is going to be a very easy solution for you to maintain and a very easy solution for them to use because they don't care about the fabric, but they don't have control over the fabric. You do, right? So it's, PaaS by design, it's kind of hidden from them. It's the best of both worlds. And this is where I see a lot of enterprises overusing the IaaS feature and not using the PaaS feature that would be a really great solution, and it would actually be more economical in terms of resources for you as a data center team and more economical for your developers, your app dev teams that are paying as they go, right? So there's a great fit here for the PaaS solution with websites and databases. So just a couple of notes here. We mentioned, 7 servers and why that is. It's how the website's component is designed to scale. Most of your deployments coming from the controller role, which is among those 7. So you want to make sure you get your prereqs out of the way. You enable the remote connectivity, deal with your firewall, etc. Anders already showed you the logs. It's the same process here, whether you're deploying the IaaS component of the PaaS, the platform logs, the event viewer, etc. Let's talk about do-overs. Have you ever wanted a do-over? With the websites component, with the PaaS component here, what you want to do for the do-over, get a snapshot right after you provision the VM, and then after you run the web platform installer and you pick websites and you get all the install done right before you hit the configure button, take another snapshot. Bam. So now we've installed, but we've not configured. So you're about to start configuring, and maybe you forgot to deal with some permission somewhere or a firewall or something. or you just have some other transient connectivity issue because maybe it's a test environment, right? That second snapshot is going to allow you to go back and try this over again. So you remember that PowerPoint. So imagine with me a few PowerPoints back, we had all the databases, right? There was the hosting database, the resource metering database. So you can restore that snapshot. You can go delete the hosting and resource metering databases. And there's your do-over. You might actually find that sometimes the resource metering database didn't even get created. The hosting database always tends to be there. But you've got a way to go back quickly and easily to try again. So let's talk about usage reporting. We get everything deployed. We're using the right components. And now we want to start dealing with some showback. There's native showback reporting with the System Center Service Reporting Solution. It's on the Orchestrator ISO. It's Excel-based. It's not really chargeback, it's showback. It's showing you usage and not so much cost. So I deploy a solution called Cloud Cruiser out in the real world with private clouds, with heterogeneous hybrid clouds, actually. And Cloud Cruiser actually makes an express version designed for WAP that's completely integrated into the WAP console from a tenant perspective. It shows tenant usage reporting. It's integrated into the portal, and it's actually free for WAP users. And moreover, it's actually production ready. It's not limited in some way that you're going to deploy two or three or four tenants and then find that it stops. It's actually fully production ready.
That's fantastic.
It is fantastic.
Fantastic.
SCOM people, operations manager folks, have you ever run a report in SCOM and it was empty?
No.
Raise your hands. Be honest. Raise your hand. I see some heads nodding. That's what I'm talking about.
If they have ever run any reports.
What's up? So understanding how the reporting data flows in WAP is really important when you get to that point that you hit the report button and it's empty, right? We want to know how to trace our way back and figure out how the data gets there. So it all starts in Virtual Machine Manager, where we're actually deploying resources from the WAP console. And we've integrated Virtual Machine Manager with Operations Manager pretty well. Established integration. It's been around for 6 or 7 years now that feeds data from VMM into SCOM. WAP actually consumes that usage data via the Service Provider Foundation, that RESTful API right there, and it goes into a usage database. It's Microsoft.ManagementService.usage.
Oh, that one.
Yes, that one. And it's fed through some SQL magic into the usage reporting data warehouse. So this is that extract, transform, and load process we were talking about. You service manager folks are familiar with this. And once that data hits the data warehouse there, we can consume it in a usage report. So we're going to have Anders, troubleshooting has been kind of the theme. Anders is going to show us around the native reports, the Cloud Cruiser reports. I also wanted him to show you some of the troubleshooting process. All the scripts he shows you here again, in the PowerPoint at the end of the session, right? So you can go pick up the SQL script and whatnot later.
More troubleshooting.
Show me the money, man.
Common theme here.
Show me the money.
Right. So about reporting, we should just say that also that it's extremely important that you plan your reporting needs in the beginning. So if you don't do that, there is a risk that you deploy all this and then you realize that you cannot generate the reports that your business wants. So make sure that you map all those requirements out before you even start with your WAP deployment.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's important. So in Operation Manager, the VMM management pack, this is where you should start if troubleshooting usage data. We gather the data from VMM with Operation Manager, and if you run this report, virtual machine utilization, and you don't have anything in here, it's blank, well, then you don't really have to troubleshoot anymore because then the problem is here. So this is really the first step. Start by verifying that you have some data in here that has come from VMM to Operation Manager. Yeah? If you don't have it, you might need some more management packs, some more agents, or the configuration between VMM and Operation Manager might not work.
Yeah, or your data warehouse is just unhealthy. Ops Manager data warehouse.
Could be that also.
Yeah.
All right, so once you have data in here, the next step will be the Service Provider Foundation database, as Pete shown before. And the easiest way to verify that is to run a SQL query against the usage record table in the service provider foundation database. So you just run it. There's no secret about these SQL queries. They're all over internet. So just Bing and you will find them. I will put them on my blog too, so you can find them easily. So we see we have some information here. And service provider foundation only keeps this data for a very short while. So it's normal to just have some like, most recent data in here. And often you only see a couple of rows in this table too. So don't worry if you only have one here. What you should do is to make a note of that record index there, because in the next query, where we check if the data has gone from the service provider foundation database to the Windows Azure Pack usage database, we should see that record index. So if we go over here and run this query against the WAP database, and we don't have the same external record ID here, then those two are out of sync, and that's a bad thing. So if they are out of sync, you don't have to go any further because you have the problem here somewhere. Yeah. Let's say that they are in sync. Mm-hmm. I just noticed that it's out of sync here. Mm-hmm. The next step would be to verify that the data has moved from the service, from the WAP database to the usage, to the service reporting usage database. And as Pete explained before, we have three databases there. So now it's the first one, the staging database. So if you run a query in the staging database, you should see some data there. We have it. Great. We have 10,000 rows there. So that's really good. And then we have the job that is moving the data from the staging database to the data warehouse database. So the last query we run is, of course, in the, let me find it. This in the usage data warehouse database. And we see that we have data over there too. So we have followed the data from Operation Manager through all the different components. And now when we have data here, we can start running reports. So if you install everything and you run the reports and they are blank, then just go back, start from Operation Manager, and then just follow the data through your environment.
Are you going to show me some chargeback?
I'm going there. Yep. So, service system center service reporting comes with two Excel files that you can use for showback. As you can see here, you see a little bit of information about how much RAM and CPU we are using, the different tenants are using here. But still, we don't see any money here.
Yeah, we don't see any dollar signs.
No dollar signs there. You could, of course, stop here and then massage the data a lot, adding on your price list on your own and doing a lot of custom scripts and all other strange things. Or you just use the next. We have a couple of more alternatives for you. So the next one here is performance point in SharePoint. And that's a really easy one to use. You start this, let me get the name here. No.
The dashboard designer, I think.
Dashboard designer, yes. Yeah. And then you just drag and drop details here from the right side until you get the report you want. And it's not that complicated, actually. You read here, like measure, like a date, and then you just drag VM networks if that's what you want to see. Not difficult at all. When you have a report you like here, you publish it to SharePoint, like that, and then you can give people access to run it in SharePoint. And this is quite nice here. We can right click and we can drill down to different levels here. For example, we can see here that we have one day here in the beginning of May, we delivered I think it's like 1700 VM runtime hours.
Yeah, so bottom line up for us, you're an IT pro, you keep saying how easy this is. How long did it take you to build what we're looking at here?
So those reports there, this report here, maybe like 1 hour and 4 cups of coffee.
Okay. Yeah, so he says 4 cups of coffee. He had 12 espresso shots by noon today, which is like a normal day. So long story short, Anders isn't a .NET developer. Performance points, you can go Bing this and pull up all sorts of articles that'll get you through the bare necessity. So we're still not looking at true chargeback.
No,
right?
no money yet.
Yeah, we're still looking at showback at this point.
But this is really nice because you can drill down here. Look at this. You can right click, drill down. For example, if I want to see which cloud we're running all these VMs, we can do cloud. And we can see that, for example, here in the production cloud, we delivered almost 600 hours VM that day. We can right-click again, and we can do virtual machines, and we can see which machines that were running that day. It looks like an old TV.
Yeah, it looks like that pattern when the TV, when the television station goes off at night, for sure.
So this is quite nice. You drag and drop until you have your report, and then you just publish it to SharePoint. Different people in your business can go in there, run the report, drill down, and just use the reports. But still no money.
Yeah, when I think showback reporting, I all I can think of is Cuba Gooding Jr., right? Just show me the money.
Right.
So show us some chargeback reporting then.
So we have Cloud Cruiser, and this is the Express version that comes with the web installer, the web platform installer. So it's quite easy to install. It's the same installation wizard that you use for Windows Azure Pack. Not complicated at all.
Okay, so I promised that it was going to be WAP integrated, so why are we in the Cloud Cruiser portal?
We are taking a detour.
Okay.
Yeah. So in here, you can run reports as an admin. You can run a little bit more complicated or advanced reports that maybe your tenants want to look at. Let me see, get the list here of reports. Here we have it. So you can look at a lot of different things here. It comes with a lot of good reports. And the nice thing is under here, under billing, we can go billing, services.
So this is really important. This is the piece where you're definitely going to go, right? As a WAP administrator.
Absolutely. So let's click one. So you see here, you have a lot of different attributes that you can use to build up the price list. So you can charge based on VM allocated or VM used, or memory allocated and memory used, or I/O for disks and network adapters, bytes sent, and so on and so on. So there's a lot of different things here that you can charge based on. And then you go in here and you configure the price, and you can have different prices for different tenants, of course, different plans, and so on. So it's really nice.
Yeah, so bottom line, you have five dimensions of cloud capacity in Virtual Machine Manager. You have way more than five dimensions that you can charge back on, right? So what are you charging back on in our example here?
I think it's runtime and a little bit of the resources they have assigned to the VMs. So we configure a price list in here. We can run a couple of different reports in here, as you saw. And the tenant now, let's go look at the tenant. So now we are on Windows Azure Pack as a tenant, and the tenant can go under My Costs, and they can click Summary, and they can see that this month they will pay 63, doesn't really say money, could be stones or sheep or something.
Or maybe even dollars.
Even dollars, doesn't say. For this example, we can say dollars.
Okay.
Yeah, so. And if the tenant then is a little bit interesting, why do I need to pay this $63? We can go in here and we can do current month. Now it's very exciting.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
There we go.
Here we go. And they see all the details why they are paying $63 this month. So it's really nice. And it comes with Windows Azure Pack, so it's just to install it.
Yeah, I remember when this integration was announced. This is a pretty big deal,
yeah.
The fact that it's free.
Yeah, and it's actually very important. We see too many businesses building these kind of solutions, but they have no plan about showback and chargeback. So the business don't really know what they're paying or why they're paying, or if they can't compare with anything else. And then they see offers from the outside about buying cloud capacity. And it's quite boring and sad that the internal IT can't show it. But with Cloud Cruiser, it's really easy to show it.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Well done. Thank you, sir. So ITSM integration. there is no ITSM integration with WAP off the shelf. There's a System Center Alliance partner called GridPro. They're a Swedish company, which I think is just a coincidence. Anders doesn't actually get remuneration from them for mentioning GridPro. But they have a request management add-in for Windows Azure pack. It adds that little request management tab, and it actually allows users to submit, track, and update incidents and service requests from the WAP portal, automatically integrated back to System Center Service Manager, which means we can open up approval. Really, really important in some environments that we have integration to facilitate the approval process, and we can do all of that in the tenant portal. So we're giving the tenant the single pane of glass. You can publish request offerings from users to users from the Service Manager catalog. I remember the first time I set this up, I was sort of surprised because I saw request offerings from my Service Manager self-service portal showing up in WAP, so it's kind of shocking. The Express version is free, and we want to be upfront with you. The Express version is limited to something like 2 or 3 request offerings. So in a production environment, it's not going to be enough for most orgs. But I find that the cost for the solutions from these guys it's like an accounting error. It's so inexpensive. So, I mean, we're talking about $5,000 to $10,000 for an enterprise to add this sort of capability in there. So when you add that into the services and the licensing, et cetera, it's pretty a pretty small consideration at the end of the day. I'm going to shut up and hand it back to Anders. Why don't you show us the ITSM integration? How about? There we go.
Okay. So the ITSM integration. So here we have used the web install platform again, and the same way we installed Cloud Cruiser, we have now installed GridPro's integration. So we have integration between Windows Azure Pack portal and our service manager environment. So when you start doing this and providing the self-service option for your business to deploy new VMs, sometimes it gets a little bit messy in the environment. They start deploying a lot of stuff and you don't really, you're just losing control of everything. So this is a quite good alternative then. So the tenant can go and do a new request, create request. We have the service catalog from Service Manager in here. So this is exactly the same information that we see in Service Manager portal. It's just that in the Service Manager portal, yeah. It just looks a little bit different here. So we go in here, infrastructure, new virtual machine. Next, we can select size again. And all this is set up inside of Service Manager. So the GridPro integration only reads from Service Manager. So we do size.
Yeah, it's actually reading our request offerings right out of the service catalog in SM.
Yeah. We pick what kind of machine we want, for example, a SQL server. We pick an expire date, for how long do we need the machine? And we pick a reason. That. And we can review all the settings here, and we can do submit, and we can do submit here, like that. What we will see now, if we go to Service Manager, we see that we have a new service request here for the machine. And in this service request, in the service request template, I only have one activity. So I don't have to have like approval steps and so on. I can start deploying the machine directly. So in this case, I have a runbook activity, an orchestrated runbook activity. Here we have it.
So that's really interesting. So we're using WAP integration to trigger runbooks that we've already built.
Yeah, exactly. So you can just reuse them here in a new scenario. And the nice thing here is that we can, you see it's starting now, we can get some control here. So instead of starting to deploy the machine directly as we would do with the VM roles, we run it through Service Manager and we can use this orchestrator runbook to make sure the naming convention is correct, we make sure it's in the correct cloud, deployed the correct way, and so on and so on. And we also get a service request in Service Manager. So we have a little bit of tracking there, what's going on.
Indeed. How many orchestrator users do we have out there? Show of hands. Yeah, so what's great about this is you can expose some other related request offerings that maybe aren't deploying virtual machines Right here in the console. So I saw your question there. Let's pick up right after the session. Just swing up here and we'll chat.
And the really tricky part here to get this to work is that you need to have a PowerShell script in the end here that's changed the owner of the virtual machine. So when we deploy the machine, if you want it to show up in the tenant portal, you need to change the owner of it. And that's a Windows Azure Pack usage user account, not the AD account you need to change it to. So that's the only tricky part there. And after a while, the tenant can go into the GridPool integration, and they can see that we have created a new machine, TechEd SQL. It's completed. Seems all the activities are completed. They have even posted a comment here. Is it ready yet?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And the machine will show up under virtual machines. And now the tenant can go in here, they can reconfigure it a little bit if they want to, if you allow that, and look at it and connect to it as all other machines. But the nice thing here is that we can have a little bit of control. We're not giving them the opportunity to just deploy. We're controlling everything with the orchestrator runbook. And we also get tracking in Service Manager.
Yeah, fantastic. Great. Thanks for the demo, Mr. Bengtsson. So let's talk lifecycle management. So when you're working with a solution as powerful as WAAP, easy deployment means it's easier to create sprawl. You know, I don't say VM sprawl because we can create databases, we can deploy apps, so we have new categories of sprawl, right? It's kind of fun. Usage has a real cost to business from a lifecycle management perspective. As data center admins, we want to make sure that we are controlling consumption appropriately, that we're getting, we're cleansing our environment of those resources that are no longer used. And the easy way to do that a lot of times is to push a report out to our end users to show them what they have deployed. And we didn't really build a self-service solution, a private cloud, to do a bunch of manual administration, right? The more manual IT operations we have, the more chance we have for mistakes.
Yeah, you saw that the environment is quite complex, so having people in there doing every little change, every little task, that won't really work, and it won't scale either, so absolutely automate everything.
Yeah, Anders and I are big fans of automation. That's something we do a lot of, so let's talk about automating lifecycle management for WAAP. Fire away.
Right. So now we're
very nice. What are we looking at here?
Oh, this is so nice. Should we just take a couple of seconds just looking at it?
We should not.
Okay. So this is SMA, our PowerShell engine for automation connected to Windows Azure Pack, and I'm logged on as admin. So I have written a small runbook here. As you might remember, when we requested the VM from the GridPro integration, we needed to input the expire date there. Yeah, you remember that?
I remember that.
Good. Yeah, so now we have a runbook running every night at 1 a.m. And the only thing the runbook is doing is looking in that cloud for VMs that has passed the expiry date. And if we find a VM there, we simply remove it.
Yeah, so I've got to stop him. I have to show you my contribution to this script. So line 14, I put that pound sign right there before the remove VM. Because the Swedish style of cleanup here is delete on the first pass.
Of course, you can have it, the runbook, like sending a couple of emails some days before, and then you can shut down the VM, take a backup, and all that. But I like the Swedish style more, like minus force, and then just remove it.
But what you could do is just loop through for each tenant and just spit out a little spreadsheet with their resources they've deployed and give them an aging report. Here are the VMs you've deployed, here are the apps you've deployed, here are the databases, and let them clean up on their own before you get more aggressive.
I think, right? I even have a blog post on Contoso around VM lifecycle, how you can do it so they can extend their lives of the VMs and so on.
I think a shorter discussion would be what you don't have a blog post on Contoso about automation is concerned.
The nice thing here, so this one is just removing VMs, but if you notice line 15, and that's my line, Pete.
Yeah. Indeed.
Yeah, it's starting another runbook. Now it's very exciting. So I have built another runbook over here. And this runbook, it just connects back to Orchestrator and creates a change request. So if you go back to Orchestrator, I have another runbook in here that creates a change request and just close it again. But we get a little bit of tracking here. So instead of just removing the VM, we now create a change saying that this machine has passed the VM, so we will delete it. And then a couple of seconds later, we delete it and we close the change request.
Yeah, lots of opportunity to reuse, leverage your existing investments in Orchestrator. It's not going away anytime soon, right? So good news there, I think.
Yeah. Nice. And it's a quite nice way to do it. We do some part with SMA, it scales very well, and then we do some part with Orchestrator, and we connect them together and pass data between them.
Yeah. So maybe where you don't have an Orchestrator runbook already, you write some SMA automation to handle the task. And if you have Orchestrator runbooks already out there, maybe you use SMA just to trigger Orchestrator automation.
Yeah. Good.
Nice. Thanks for that. So additional resources, I mentioned all of the links we talked about. Let me click a few times here, or right here for you to go pick up after the show. This deck's probably already out on the show net. So I hope we've given you some food for thought when you go back home and Monday or Tuesday get started.
Or Sunday.
Yeah. So Anders' mobile phone is on the next slide, so just write that down for tech support. But we've tried to give you just, the highlights of what we've hit in the real world, lots of in-depth, step-by-step troubleshooting data in those resource links that we pulled together for you there. Make sure, if you would, to visit some of the related sessions. There's some great hands-on labs related to WAP. There is also some motivation for filling out your eval. Some prizes, I think, maybe.
Yeah, so please fill in your eval, and as always, be honest but generous.
But mostly generous.
Yeah, mostly generous. Focused on generous.
Hey, so we're down to about 8 minutes for Q&A, so we'd love to talk to you here. Also happy to let this spill over into the Ask the Expert. So we really appreciate you guys hanging in here after a really long day.
Thank you.
And show some love to our guy Anders here, who put together a lot of demos for this. Anders put in weeks. Appreciate it.